Yo, what's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet again another fantastic indie creator interview. It's your K-Pro Sarah Cody, and we're keeping it geekly with our two new guests. We have Edwin Collazo and William Suarez. We're here to break down Pixelate Games and Tales from Centropolis. Welcome to the stream, you two. How are you guys doing?
Great. Can't complain. Good. Beautiful weather here. New Jersey, yeah. So yeah, loving it.
I'm walking here. He's like, we don't even sound like that. Stop it.
I never recognize my accent. You know, like my wife, when she met me, she was like, oh, you have this weird Brooklyn accent, like water. I'm like, I never hear that. But yeah, I guess I have an accent.
They say the same thing about me too, so I don't. I lost most of it being in California, but I still have it when I get mad. But,
so did you live in Jersey too?
No, I lived in Brooklyn.
Oh, Brooklyn. So what? Yeah. Did you guys know each other? Then you moved to California.
Yeah, we're cousins.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, I thought like you two met like through the ethers. You know, because a lot of times that's what happens in these interviews. Like a lot of small world. Small world.
We both have the same glasses. We're related.
I was like, man, they're really good friends. These two are really. I mean, that takes a big chunk of the introduction because I was going to ask how you two met, but let's begin with the basic of how you two got into creating video games. I mean, did one start and then the other one's like, hey, I'm going to follow soon. We're going to make something out of this, or how did that happen?
Well, William, you went to college and you took,
I started, and I actually, you know, I went to school to learn how to do video games, 3D animation, you know, 3D modeling. So the whole thing. And then a bunch of, you know, me and my friends, we kind of got together and we decided, oh, let's make a game. So we did that, but we didn't really do any kind of marketing or anything like that. So nobody ever saw it. Nobody ever downloaded it. It kind of just went unnoticed on the App Store and everything like that. And that's kind of, I kind of had a little bit of, you know, experience with some of the engine stuff and, you know, using any 3D program. So I guess I could say I started first and, you know, kind of nudged, you know, Ed along and said, come on, you know, let's do it this way. let's try this instead, you know, instead of, you know, the graphic novel, which was originally what the, you know, what it was supposed to be, you know, so.
Yeah,
so
I knew zero, about game development or even pixel art. I mean, for a long time, I was mainly into the indie comic scene, like before the bubble burst. And one of the issues that I always had in the back of my mind is I've done a lot of penciling for indie publishers, but I never really told my own story. And I feel like I've never had a chance to actually do it. However, I mean, as a comic collector, you kind of understand how the industry is. It's not as easy to just publish a comic. Mm-hmm. You know, like you can easily go ahead and sell out of your trunk of your car or in conventions, but the reach is very limited. There's very few comic shops around anymore, so it's not like it used to be. So like, where was the reach? So I wanted to do it, but I figured it's going to be one of those things where I'll work hard on this project and maybe a handful of readers, you know, it'll reach them. So then when I was explaining these frustrations with William, and he was like, you know, this story sounds like it could be a video game. And so something clicked, but at the same time, like, all right, but how the hell are we going to make a video game? Like, we had no idea about the indie game scene. Mm-hmm. Like, we had no idea there was actually a scene where people were independently creating their own game and using a platform like Steam to publish it. Like, it was unheard of. And when we started looking into this, we started realizing we can actually pull this off. But there's a bit of a problem. I don't know anything about pixel art. I don't know anything about animation when it comes to pixel art, and you sure as hell don't know how to write code. So that's a problem. So we're going to have to overcome this obstacle and in order to actually get the ball rolling with this game. So we took about a couple years. I just kept on with pixel art because I had a little bit of an edge with comic illustration. So I kind of understood, you know, character, you know, design. Mm-hmm. But the restricted nature of pixel art was extremely challenging. Like, when you're illustrating a comic, you have free reign. Like, it's like sky's the limit what you can illustrate. Pixel art is like every pixel matters. And if you misplace a pixel, it kind of ruins the design and it doesn't make sense. So you have to be conscious of every single pixel you add into this design. And combined with animation, it became a problem. So then, you know, I spent like a couple years constantly like wiping the slate clean of all of our assets for Tales from Centropolis. I mean, freaking out William at the last minute. But I'm like, I'm telling you, like, I don't feel comfortable with these. I think it feels like it's not my design. I feel like I'm using assets from an asset store, and I need to sort of create something that feels like it's more of a character. And so, yeah, I just kept refining it. And then at the same time, William was basically up to his eyeballs in Udemy tutorial videos.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think what I love the most about that is when you're like, spend all this time working on a comic book for, you know, just X amount of people to see it, and then you spend quadruple that amount of time working on a video game.
Yeah, exactly. But the cool thing is that it feels like the one thing I felt like it is more of a change when it came to comic book is the immersion. Mm-hmm. Is like, not only because it's a cross audience between comic book collectors and gamers, and to not only be able to reach both sides, but to have someone feel like they're in the story rather than just, you know, reading the story. And I think it gravitated, you know, me towards that art of just, you know, creating a game rather than a comic book. I mean, believe me, by all means, after this game project is over, I'm gonna revisit making a graphic novel. But it's just something about it. It feels like you're along the journey with the main character, you know, of this game. And I think it's fun. I mean, honestly, I've had a blast putting this thing together.
Like reading a comic, that's up to the reader's interpretation of what they take on your book compared to a video game where you're fully immersed with like sounds, you know, playing it. Often with an RPG, you're creating that character in your likeness, like mentally, you know what I mean? Like you're like, I want to be super powerful and stuff. So before we dive too much into the story, you know, Will, let's throw it back to you. How was that pivot from creating, you know, your first game to diving into this game? You know, was there a lot of like trials and tribulations with learning different mechanics and developing skills?
I mean, I've taken some courses in programming and it never really clicked. I couldn't figure it out. It just kind of, so I always gravitated more towards the art side of things, you know, like the 3D modeling, like I was saying. So I was doing those type of things, and, you know, the just code just looked like, you know, the Matrix to me.
Yeah.
It's like, I have no idea what's happening, but, you know, all these words are in different colors.
There's a lady in a red dress somewhere.
Exactly. Something along those lines. But yeah, so it just kind of took a lot of practice and a lot of just doing and testing, because, you know, a lot of people, you know, you if you just follow a tutorial and you just follow it, you know, beat per beat, yeah, you're going to have a product at the end, but you won't know how to use it. You won't know how to adjust it. You won't know how to make it. So it was kind of like, okay, now what happens if I do this? Now what happens if I do this? And then little by little, just kind of a switch flipped in my brain. And I was like, oh, I understand what it is. I understand how I can make this. And, you know, because I'm self-taught, there's probably, you know, I can't say that my code is efficient, you know, it probably isn't, because I might be going from, I got to go from point A to point B, but I'm going, you know, A to C to D, and then I'm going, oh yeah, now I finally made it. But it still works at the end of the day, and I'm like, oh, I'm amazed that it's still like actually getting there. So, you know, that's just, you know, to me, it's actually fun. I think I always had a thing in my, you know, I just loved puzzles, and programming is just one puzzle after another where it's like, why isn't this working? Why can't I figure it out? And then, you know, 3 days later, you're like, oh, I just did one little tiny thing and that was it. And you know, you're upset. You want to break a keyboard or two, but you know, after that, you're like, that's never happening again.
I would have probably had my fist through a monitor at that point. This is an awesome game. I mean, for everyone that is watching on the Keeping It Geekly side of things, we have the 3 minute clip of just like all these gorgeous, gorgeous, you know, snippets of gameplay. I love the illumination and just how like bustling the city is. I mean, it's just filled. But let's get down to the brass tacks. So this is a retro top-down RPG inspired by EC Comics, film noir, and early Final Fantasy or Tales games. So what made you guys want to take this and go into the RPG genre out of like all the different ones that you could have entered into? Like, what about RPG drew you into it?
Want to take this one away?
Yeah. I blame him. That was my fault. I'm just a huge fan of RPGs. I like the immersion when you have the story. I mean, the game as, you know, what the story that we're trying to tell could also be told as like a point and click game. You know, most of the time when you do see like a detective story or something like that, you always have it in a point and click fashion. And, you know, to me, I do like point and click games, but there's also a certain point where they kind of also just, sometimes it's like, oh, this puzzle is just annoying or it's whatever. And, you know, you kind of get disengaged and it's very easy to sidetrack. But, it, you know, with RPG, it's really, you know, it's really difficult for me to like just say, I don't want to play this anymore. It has to really be like, you know, utter garbage that I'm like, God, this is like, I feel like I'm just in pain grinding through this for me to stop. And, you know, I just feel that the RPG has like, it just has that kind of immersion, you know, that you, once you get into it and once you start feeling for the characters and feeling for the world, it's really hard to kind of put it down without trying to like have that, you know, little itch, just like, I want to know what happens next. I want to see how this gets resolved. And I don't know, it's just, you know, I just play a lot of RPGs, so I think I'm probably a little bit more partial to to those kind of games.
Yeah.
So, that's just, you know, my thing, I guess.
Yeah, those multiple occasions where I told Williams, like, I think we picked the wrong genre. Like, honestly, like, for our first game, like, we really did it to ourselves. You know, because like anybody else would have done a platformer or, you know, something where like their first game and then later on graduate to RPG, but it was like baptized by fire. We just went directly to the worst one.
Well, I do have something to say to that, though. Okay, so that was my thought when me and my friends, like I was saying earlier, we made our first game, right? And we said, let's do something simple. Let's make something simple. And it was just like a quick little kind of like, you know, shooter kind of thing that you know, you just click on your screen and it does something. But you know what? The game was good. It wasn't bad. But after, you know, I was doing a lot of testing on that game. And after testing it and looking at it, I swear I did not want to play it anymore. It was just kind of like you lose the passion for it. And at a certain point, it was just like, ugh. And I still carried over a little bit of regret that I'm like, when we first started, we wanted to make a game with a story. We wanted to make a game that told a story. And we decided to do this first just to kind of like, you know, do it. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not doing that shit again. I'm going to make the game I want to make. I don't care. I know it's going to take long. I know it's going to be, but you know what? If we could pull it off, it's going to be worth it because it's much better than making a small game and then getting really discouraged in the middle and then just rage quitting. But if you really, really like it and you love it, it's hard to just let it go and say, nah, I don't want to do this anymore. And, you know, and that small little game took years that we were, you know, working on it. Cause you think, oh, it's going to take a couple of months. And then it's years. And you're like, oh, this really sucks. That was, you know, it was great to learn, but man, we should have made what we were going to be passionate about instead. So I have no apologies about that. I'm sorry.
That's the best route to go though, because like at the end of the day, you're happy with your product, right? You're about it. There's no regrets. Yeah. Now, back into the world of Tales from Centropolis, we're set in the 1920s. A private detective takes on a case that involves a murder, industrial espionage, and a quest for a missing girl. I mean, there's a lot of interesting, you know, topics going on here. Why, you know, throw it all the way back into the 1920s? I mean, I love that era. I love the design, you know. Yep. I think you guys really hit, you know, the nail on the head with it.
Yeah, that'll be my fault. So, the reason why I chose 1920s, I'm a huge history buff. Mm-hmm. And there was something about not only the simplicity of that time, but the complexity of having to get things done. And when, like, during that period, I was heavily into watching stories about and documentaries about World War One, about that period, about the pandemic at the time, Spanish flu. And so I figured, you know what, it would be challenging, and I think it'll be a lot more fun story-wise to actually create a game in this time. Because let's say you design a game around this period. If I create an object or some sort of device, it's like there's no explanation. I don't have to explain how this device works and how it functions. You just get it. It's modern time. Mm-hmm. But in 1920s, like, you got to say, okay, this didn't exist. That didn't exist. This wasn't invented yet. How are we going to go ahead and sort of mildly explain how this thing works. And so that's why I felt like it was more of a challenge. It was more interesting. That's the reason why we called it like a Tesla Punk, because the power source is due to Nikola Tesla actually winning the war of the currents of the time over Edison, rather than Edison winning. So that is essentially created a technological boom. And what that did was it extended World War One. But I think the most fun,
he's really into this, isn't he? He's really into this.
Yeah, yeah. even so much so, the most fun part about it was not only researching things like furniture, clothing, slang at the time, but also color palettes. So obviously, most of the imagery is black and white, so you really don't know like what color dresses or suits people wore. So I had to go on eBay instead of look up clothing of that period and say, okay, this was kind of hot color at this time. This is a color palette, and sample all those and use those for the game, you know, especially researching building structures. So, I mean, I think it was a challenging and fun period. And that's actually part of the reason why I chose to write the story for the comic book in the same period, because it was something where I'm like, I think I enjoy this and I enjoy the research, and I think this is an appropriate story to tell in this period. And yeah, I mean, I think it shows. I mean, I'm pretty passionate about the design, level design, and the aesthetics.
You know, I often wonder what would happen if Tesla would have not got screwed over like he did, right? Like, he wanted free energy for everybody. And, you know, the U.S. government was like, nah, dude, not on our watch.
And there were secret patents as well. There were conversations where Tesla mentioned that he had the resolution for the end of the war and all wars. But he had
wasn't it a death machine?
Yeah,
super
laser.
Yes.
Yeah, he also boasted that he had a patent for a robot. There's so many things that he explained that he had, and it's one of those things where is he known for lying? Like, not really. So like, it's a good possibility that he might have come up with a design for this stuff.
You know, sorry, William. We're gonna have to. This is we're officially a Tesla
geek. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I already know how it is. Once he starts going, I'm like, all right.
Yeah. I mean, he was an incredible figure. I mean, so much so that he didn't think he was worthy enough to have children to procreate. I'm like, this guy's like a genius, but he's so par he could consider himself, you know, but. Yeah, it was an interesting character and in history, and the war itself was completely interesting. Mm-hmm. And that I can go on and on, but I'm not going to go on and on about World War One. But that's the reason why I wanted to extend the story. And if you notice, there are certain scenes within there where the war is currently going on, but things sort of change within Tales from Centropolis, within that world. And so, of course, like everyone knows that during the end of World War One, resources were running thin. And so in our story, resources were running really thin. And so corporation came in and said, we'll essentially fund the war. And that ended up becoming more of a industrial, I would say, more of a hostile takeover, where they actually now they're branded as a corporation at war. So the soldiers wearing their own flags now are wearing the symbol of Innova Corporation.
You know, I love that so much, because there's what was it? There's like famous brands that, like, if you look at their beginning, like they were involved with, like, there's like a washer machine company that used to like make military parts, like when they first started. So BMW. I love how you. I love how you guys intertwine all this stuff. It's so immersive once you really start digging away at the layering. William, what are some of the mechanics and features that you put in to this game that were some of the favorite elements you loved in RPGs?
Oh, you mean I put all the mechanics in. So I love them all, because I didn't create them, but I like them. But I mean, there's a lot of different mechanics. I mean, if you're just kind of going off down the list, you know, the basic, you know, every RPG you need, you know, shops and things like that. And since our world is a little bit different, and we have, you know, and instead of, you know, we have a lot more robots and things like that, a lot of stuff is automated. So you don't go to a shopkeeper, everything is vending machines. just vending machines. You go to a vending machine, that's where you're going to buy your food, that's where you're going to buy your drinks, that's where you're going to get your stuff. So it's like, you know, everything is a lot more automated. So, you know, mm-hmm. building that, and then, you know, Ed went and he designed really cool, like, you know, like every single company is different and every single company has, like, you know, a look and feel about them. So if you walk into a Jolso shop, right, which is kind of like our, you know, our cola, I won't say which cola, but it's like our cola shop that kind of, you know, but it's a, you know, there's drinks there, but, you know, it has its own look, feel, vibe. And then if you go into a different shop where, you know, let's say you're going to go ahead and get upgraded or whatever, that's the Rewire store. And the Rewire store has its own look and feel.
So what are you upgrading, though? You know, like weapons, like, you know, abilities?
Well, you can upgrade, yes, like your weapons and your suit and things like along those lines, because you are just, you know, you're a brain inside a jar, and mm-hmm. that's encased with this exosuit, basically. So you have to kind of upgrade the exosuit, and that's more of the level up system, as opposed to going just like normal XP and all that stuff. You actually will just go ahead, upgrade your suit, and that's how your character will get progressively stronger.
That's so cool.
And we kind of went that route because it just felt it felt more organic. Like, it felt like that's kind of what you would do if you were in that situation, mm-hmm. as opposed to I beat this guy, I am 5, you know, points smarter now. Like, what the hell does that do? That doesn't make any sense. But it's like, no, I reconfigured this, now my suit's stronger. Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes more sense. But also, it kind of limits some, you know, a little bit of that, you know, play testing and the level type of, you know, things that you have when you're trying to balance those levels later on. It'll kind of eliminate some of that, because, you know, with just two people trying to just, you know, figure out those numbers and then redoing it over and over, it you know, it would become daunting. So we kind of, you know, had to, you know, kind of take a little bit away in order to make it doable for us. So
Ed, brain in a jar. Well, what's up with that? Is that like a nod to Futurama at all? Like, when they used to put heads in a jar?
No. So the idea was, when we wrote the characters, one of the things that I've always read is that you need to have sort of flaws. Like, that's the first thing you write down about this character. You develop the flaws as well as, you know, all the pros of this character and what they're capable of. And I wanted to just give him sort of a handicap. And so the idea was, he's essentially just a brain in sort of a quad pod, you know, machine walking around that was discovered by Marshall, which is your sidekick. And the idea was, they needed to, because the world is automated and there's a laborer sort of a situation going where they're rioting over the automation, basically taking over a lot of the jobs, mm-hmm. that are within his world. They have a bit of a resentment towards these robots, and they decided to go ahead and take the main character, Price, the brain, and Marshall wanted to sort of rehabilitate him in a certain sense. Like, obviously, having him as a brain walking around the city can be problematic. So he creates a sort of mech suit, powered, like battery-powered mech suit, where he can basically place the jar in there. It's sort of more humanoid. Mm-hmm. However, because of the hostility in the city, he's a little self-conscious. So you notice he's a robot that's wearing a hat, wearing a scarf to kind of hide his face a little bit, as well as a trench coat. It's kind of hard to be a detective and sort of get sort of answers or even interrogate people when they just obviously hate your guts. You know, like, you're the bane of their existence. Why they're struggling at this period. And so we decided to go that route. I felt like giving the main character, not making him OP, but essentially having him sort of have phobias, having, you know, struggles when he's trying to do his job, and have a heart when he's trying to do it, you know, although missing, you know, but but the thing is, like, he wants to help people as much as possible, mm-hmm. despite, you know, the hostility towards him. And an interesting mechanic that we have in the game is, depending on your form, if you're in the brain form, people are just grossed out by you and just horrified. So the dialogue changes.
That is in that awesome
form. Yeah, and so depending on the form, so if you become you jump back in your suit, if your battery is fully charged, you're back in the mech suit, you'll be able to have more access to certain places. you know, than you would as the brain. And so the idea was also is we wanted to give sort of the player a little bit of insecurity when they're not in their mech suit. Like, we wanted to make sure that keep an eye on your battery. If your battery runs low, you know, try to find a battery, go searching, go find a battery vending machine, go find a charging station, because if that thing basically tanks out, you're going to be popped out of that suit and you're going to be completely vulnerable. Yeah, vulnerable throughout this entire city.
Kind of reminds me, have you ever played Mortal Shell?
No, I never played that.
It's like a Souls-like game.
Yeah, it's a game. I know what you're talking about.
Basically, it's like you're a soul and you get into a shell, and when you get hit, like when you get a devastating like death blow, you get knocked out of the shell, and like it's like one hit kill, you know what I mean, when you're out of the shell. But I love the idea of this, like the vulnerability when you're outside. Yeah. Like you're a beast, like in, you know, in the suit, but outside of it, like you can get stomped on. Like I love like the difference in the contrast between that. So like, is the combat around this like the humanoids like trying to kill the robot then, like because they hate him, or what's the combat, you know, who are these enemies?
So the enemies, depending on the neighborhood that you're in. So like we can, for example, there are certain sections that are within a district that are overly hostile towards robots. Mm-hmm. And when they see you, there's a possibility these laborers may get into fisticuffs with you.
That's so cool.
There's also certain districts that are mob, yeah, basically mob run.
Like gangs.
So gangs. So you may have like, you know, muggers. Or someone basically trying to kill you within this neighborhood, but more or less the main villain, which I don't want to give away too much, you're gonna see a repeated type of villain that these enemies constantly popping up, trying to stop you because you're getting a little too close to basically what nefarious, you know, things they're doing. So yeah, so it kind of like you stumbled.
It just became minions.
Yeah, minions. Okay. Even better.
It's yeah. The henchmen.
Yeah.
So not the yellow big, guys, right? You
know. Yeah.
No, not the. That's why I changed it. Then people just started. Like, no, I
mean, that was pretty spot on.
Yeah. No, I was gonna do that.
So it basically, depending on the area you're in, so there are safe areas, but if you go down certain alleyways, like anything can possibly happen. This is the reason why when you're in the brain form, you kind of want to avoid those areas because you're not in your suit. So we want sort of players to be like a little bit of a panic mode. However, we also introduce a mechanic where you can eject out of the suit if you wanted to get into areas that you don't have access to, like vents. Ooh. To be able to get to secret and hidden areas.
That's cool.
Yeah, so we wanted to make sure that, of course, like a private eye, if he has to get into a building and find clues, how is he going to get in there? If there's a vent somewhere, he can easily just eject out, go through the vent, and voila, he's inside the building now, full access to continue his investigation. Right. You're going to come across augmented, which is another thing, that a theme within the game. Mm-hmm. There are veterans that initially came back from World War One that didn't necessarily have their limbs, and so with Innova continuing the war, they want to keep sending them back into the grinder. So if you lose your arm, you lose your leg, they created something called augmentations, so it replaces your limbs. However, these things are battery powered.
Hey, you die heavy. When we say you die.
Yeah, exactly. And they send them off, so you're gonna find a lot of people that are augmented. Mm-hmm. With not as good equipment as Innova would for the soldiers, but you'll have people in the city that are almost, you know, walking around with spider legs or I don't want to give away too much because I'm still designing those.
Yeah, the vets, basically, you know, all the vets that come back. So
yeah, or even just anyone with an accident, you know. So you're gonna see a bunch of those people within there. We have a host of different enemies. Like
I think right now would be a perfect segue. Let's go ahead, pull up the Kickstarter and see what they all look like right on the campaign. So give me a few seconds. Telling you two backstage, I love just how animated this Kickstarter is. I've covered hundreds of Kickstarters. I mean, that's what I do. And like, you could tell you guys are game developers because how animated all of this is. It's so like refreshing because like a lot of like Kickstarter ones, you know, after the initial video, there's not much movement. And it's, I don't know, it's like, it's almost like a whole different like thing, seeing just so much going on.
Yeah, I couldn't help myself.
That's,
So yeah, so
that's the designer.
It's awesome.
The designer
though.
Just was like, I think everything it kind of, you know, you have to, if you want to put out your project and you want to make it get noticed, then you know you have to gotta pull out all the stops as much as you can.
Absolutely.
But you know, it's just, you know, everything looks fantastic, and
yeah,
it's just,
but it's essentially like a playground. Like for me, like to, yeah. How can I not animate certain things? Like
yeah,
the thing.
Yeah.
So when I'm designing, I'm like, you know, it'd be cool if sparks come out of this thing, you know, and I just put it together, yeah. And why not just throw it in.
And then yeah. Will's like, why do you make me program this? Stop.
that's mostly, yeah. I mean, typically it's kind of what ends up happening is we have kind of a give and take. It's mm-hmm. almost like if you have an idea or I have an idea, then we're going to try it. That's it. We don't care.
Yeah.
We know it may not work, but we're going to try it. And we try it. We get it all the way up to the point where it actually works. And then we trash it. Okay. Yeah. and then we say, that didn't work. Yeah. All right.
So,
I guess we got, you know, but we still do it. That's even like showing like, I'll just let it go. Cause there's a lot of things. Like if you even look at, I've said this before, but like the UI for the actual like menu itself, very nice, very clean. That's the third menu that we went through because the first two didn't work because mm-hmm. it just didn't look right. They were going to be confusing, but you know, it's kind of like here, this is, you know, we it's just a process of like, this is the idea. Let's try it out. We tried it and then it's like, all right, it's not working. So let's get rid of it. So that's kind of like I was saying, that's kind of the way it is with everything. So when it comes down to a mechanic, when it comes down to just how something is going to act or interact with something else, it's like, all right, let's see if it works. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? That actually worked pretty well, or it doesn't. And then we just kind of move from there and just take whatever lessons we've learned and try to make better choices in the future, hopefully.
We are looking at Tales from Centropolis. Everyone, once again, right there is that link. Currently at $13,701 of a $3,500 goal. Or excuse me, $35,000 goal with 165 backers and 25 days left to go. 5 days in, you guys are nearing that halfway mark. You're inching closer and closer with Forward Fund as well. Congratulations. How are you guys feeling? This is your first Kickstarter, right?
First Kickstarter, yeah. Honestly, we were just winging it. Is Kickstarter, so we don't have any outside you know support, so we don't have mm-hmm. any publishers helping us to put this together. We have no agency support, and so it's just us, you know, going on social media trying to build awareness, trying to show people the game, and we're incredibly surprised that we got it this high, to be honest with you, and we're extremely proud. So you know, whichever direction this Kickstarter goes, we can honestly sit back and say, you know what, like we did a pretty good job for just two guys that knew nothing of Kickstarter and how to market this thing, and you know, we gave it our all. So it's something to be proud of.
I love just the colors in this. The color palettes are gorgeous. I know you said you did a lot of research, but just watching yeah. this and seeing all the illumination and the way you incorporated like the 1920s with like that neon look, it's chef kiss. Like it's beautiful.
Another fun thing too is most or all recordings from 1920s is public domain. And so William built a radio mechanic where we can actually have radios
that's
within
cool.
the environment. And we have a video clip of that where you can just, if you walk into a room, you'll hear like old 1920s recordings playing and you can turn the radio on and off.
That's so cool. I love things like that. Just like the small attention to details, just it makes so much difference in a game.
Well, yeah.
I was going to say just that, you know, a lot of the main focus, especially if you look at a lot of stuff, is just that we wanted to make the world feel like it's actually lived in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a place where people exist. And, you know, so it doesn't have the same old usual, you know, pixel art style where, you know, everything looks really, really clean and everything looks really, really far apart. Like, it's just like, wow, this street is gigantic. You know, even though the streets probably were pretty big back then, you know, it was Edwin's, you know, decision to kind of make everything feel a little bit more claustrophobic, a lot more cramped. So it just gives that, you know, and also a lot more dirty. So it kind of gives it a little bit more of a, you know, a realistic feel, because we don't, mm-hmm. you know, you don't really think of it like, oh yeah, you know, I got this, you know, street and everything is perfect in this thing. So, you know, and then, you know, going into also changing how all the, you know, I don't know, there's just a lot of work going into just making sure that every single scene, no matter what, like if you look at it and you turn around, you can kind of see like every single shot looks like something you could just say, this is a screenshot and it still mm-hmm. looks good. And that was kind of also another thing that we were looking for. Oh, look at that. Oh, I just wanted to bring that up. Because if you look at the change forms, I think he actually, I think in that clip, you can see that when he goes up to him, he says one thing. And then after you transform, he actually says something different. If you can, I don't know if you can zoom into that, but that's.
Oh, no, I can't. I can't zoom in.
Too bad. But that's kind of the
mechanic.
But
everyone watching, click on the link and yeah, exactly. You can zoom in on yourself.
Go ahead and look in and you can see it.
So, and like, while you're there, you can back as well. Now, a cool thing is, we were talking backstage, you know, Will, you said you're the big RPG fan, but Ed is a little bit of the beat 'em up, and you guys, looks like you have a perfect combination of both within the combat system.
Yeah, I wasn't even, like, one of the things that I wasn't even aware of was, which Willem introduced me to, were the Tales games. And when I saw that, I was like, wait a minute, are you mean to tell me this is an RPG that has real-time battles? It doesn't have turn-based? And once he showed me that, I'm like, this potential here, like I can create something. Like, this is sort of the genre that I grew up and that I love, and I feel like it's, when it came out to turn-based, nothing against turn-based, but I felt like within this game it'll slow the pace. Mm-hmm. So if there's a situation where you're on a chase or someone, or you're about to get into a boss battle, and if it gets into a turn-based, I feel like it brings the tone down a bit and it slows things down rather than you being part of the action and you getting in there and actually fighting. So it was a given that we were going to go that direction, mm-hmm. to sort of tell the story and keep that pace, you know, moving along within the game. So, and I think it works out.
Yeah, this is gorgeous. I love like the little energy blast Kamehameha. It looks like, does that like take away from his battery life at all? Like, does any of these,
it
so
does,
like actually. how does the player balance that when they're fighting?
So it comes down to preparation.
we don't know actually.
Yeah.
Because honestly, that's part of the balancing that mm-hmm. you have to do when it comes down to, you know, the battles and making sure and all that stuff. But that's kind of one of those things where you know if you played a final fight, if you played any beat 'em up, whenever you do your super move, there's a penalty for it.
Yeah,
you don't
yeah.
just do it, you know, and even when you play any RPG, you know, you do have usually you have a separate meter that's your magic. And then, OK, when you deplete your magic, then OK, you know, of course, you can't really do anything anymore.
But
so it's
when
the
you
same
deplete
kind
your
of concept,
when you deplete your magic in other games, like, you're not left in a different light. Like, do you switch to the brain form when you run out of energy mid fight, or is that after the fight? That's a big thing. Are you still able to fight? Like, what's that look like? Do you take more damage?
Well, the thing is that, you know, right now you don't really see it because this is just a short clip and you're not, you know, the battle isn't finishing. But mm-hmm. just like even in the beat 'em up, you know, people will drop items. So there's a high likelihood that people might drop a healing item, you know, or, ooh. You know, like a final fight where you just pick up the chicken and now it's like, oh, I'm healed, you know. So mm-hmm. it's that kind of a thing. But typically it's like, yeah, you want to kind of watch out. We're going to give you plenty of chances to have as many batteries as you possibly can. You could,
that's,
you know,
cool.
They're going to be in the environment. They're going to be things that you could, you know, you can buy them in the shops and you can, or the vending machines, because there is no shops. And maybe even like after you defeat an enemy that is mechanized, they might drop some. So, you know, that's kind of like, you know, the random roll. But I mean, yeah, you want to be prepared. You're not, it's not going to be something where it's just like, I can just do whatever and wing it. No.
I love these boosts too. The save boost, the charging stations. Like, you guys have it all in this world. It's such a cool feeling. I love like how retro this feels right here too, with the floor and all the machines and everything. This is awesome. You really nailed this look.
Thank you, appreciate it. Yeah, and to expand a little bit on the battle, which William and I had plenty of conversations about it, because we were kind of nervous about it. Like, are people going to feel like this is, you know, a little too hard, a little too complicated? But at the end of the day, like, we both agreed that, you know, like, we don't want to essentially insult the player. Like, the player knows that they should be prepared for a battle. So by just holding their hand and just giving them, you know, free reign of power and battery life, I think that it makes for a less challenging game. And I think that's the enjoyment of the game, is the challenge. Like, if you're if you're playing Tales from Centropolis and you're in the city and you know there's a hostile environment that you're about to walk into, you would probably say, let me make sure I have enough batteries first, or let me go find a vending machine. So we want to make sure that the player has a good chance, you know, to defeat the enemies without a doubt. If they happen to be in a situation they don't have batteries, like William mentioned, by beating the enemies, they will drop, you know, Jolts or Colas, and it'll instantly charge your battery. But yeah, we wanted to give him at least a little bit of a challenge, you know, rather than just, you know, let him just, you know, button smash and just beat the entire game. So
there is also one more thing. There's no random encounters. You will see the enemies on the screen. So it's not like, oh, I didn't know that a battle was coming up, and, you know, it just, you know, all of a sudden you get into 20 battles within three steps. No. You're going to see the enemy and you're going to have a chance. You'll walk up and you'll have a chance to say, oh, there's an enemy, I'm not ready for this, let me back out. So you can see them there. You'll know that they're there. So you have a chance to get away.
Do they come back after beating them? Like, are you able to, like, you know how certain areas you can, like, come back and, like, they'll, like, reappear and you can just, like, sit there and grind? Is that how it's going to work here, or, like, one and done?
No, I think it's going to be more or less like when you beat them, they're gone. Mm-hmm. But once you know, they may come back. This is still undecided on, you know, this is probably one of those things that, you know, the balancing. But it's still, they may come back, but it's only, you know, probably after you leave the area entirely.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can't just grind and go, I left the screen, I come back into the screen, the guy is there, let me fight him again, leave and come back. Because then, you know, then the people aren't really playing the game anymore. They're just literally staying in one spot so that they can grind for resources.
It's 100% what I do every time.
I know, I do that too. That's what I'm saying.
I've been rocking like Xenoblade Chronicles 3. And like, I seriously got stuck on this one fight and I grinded. It was like 10 or 20 levels. And then I went back and just annihilated them. I'm like, let's see you do it again. So we've arrived at the tiers. Let's go ahead and start breaking some of these down. So at 25 or more, you can get the Laborer, which gets you a digital copy, a desktop wallpaper, and the name and the credits. At 40, we have Iron Worker. This gets you a digital copy, desktop, name and the credits, and digital soundtrack as well. Inspector, which is going to get you all the tiers listed, three times the desktop wallpaper, beta access to the key, and then exclusive Kickstarter backer Discord role. Excuse me, when's this beta supposed to drop? Do you guys have any sort of roadmap for that?
I'll take this one. Right now, we've been anticipating finishing up the demo. So the idea, running up to the Kickstarter, we wanted to have the demo already officially ready in order to sort of distribute this to influencers or anyone who was willing to play it and sort of showcase it. However, we felt it wasn't 100% ready. There was a lot of aesthetics that I needed to add to the city. Like, for example, if you look at the city, there's no augmented people walking around because they're currently being designed. There's no floating advertisements. Like, one of the things I wanted to introduce was essentially balloons floating by, almost like Blade Runner-ish, with the advertisements floating, you know, basically playing on the screen. So there's a lot of things I wanted to sort of use in there. Plus, we decided to sort of tweak not just the battle mechanics, because we felt that, like, what you saw above, maybe it's maybe too claustrophobic, so we may expand it even further than what we have, as well as really refine. Like, we have such a cool idea and design for the investigation mechanics that it's detrimental to the game, and so none of that was ready quite yet. And so we pulled the demo. So, all right, we're not going to go through with the demo with the Kickstarter. I'd rather be have a demo that I can stand behind than have something which
I think that's a smart move, though.
Yeah. So we essentially, once the Kickstarter storm finally passes, we're even more motivated to jump back and finish his demo. But we're super excited. Like, I tell William this probably every day. Like, I can't wait for this Kickstarter to be over. I have so many things that I want to design and I want to get to. And I feel like I can't dedicate all my time to it. But I'm, like, more motivated than ever, you know, just by the outpour of support for this game. So, yeah.
So we have the equipment operator at 100 or more. This is going to get you everything listed with a digital concept art book. We have the engineer at 150, which will get you game tester credit, exclusive tester Discord role, and then an enamel pin, which this thing's adorable. So who's this little guy? Is this the brain?
That is actually the logo for Pixelate Games. That's okay. A character that my daughter designed.
Aww.
And I was like, you know what? That would be pretty cool to have that little character that she used to make all the time. My daughter's 9 now, but when she was much younger, she used to take Play-Doh and make a series of these characters.
That's so cool.
You know, and paint them and have them on her dresser. And I was like, cool. I can make a good design. So, yeah. So
I have a 10-year-old turning 11, and then, 6 and 4. So I feel that, dude. I'm surprised you have enough time to work on a game.
I have 4 kids. I have two grown men that are kids. Like, well, they're no longer kids, but I have a 19-year-old, a 20-year-old, and then I have a 9-year-old, and I have a 6-year-old.
Yeah, I got two. So we're going down, and we're going. I guess I got to catch up with you guys or something like that. And then, we're going in descending order. It's 4, 3, and then I'm down here at 2. Yeah, so
yeah, I got 3, and I told him if they want to make allowance, I got to start watching the stream. Get that viewership up. Gotta get those numbers up. So we have the engineer role. The product R&D at 300 or more. So that gets you a dedication plaque. Invent a product. In design credit, what's this invented product? Is this going to be like a product in the game?
Yeah.
Oh, yep. That's cool.
Yeah. Most of the higher tier rewards are actually things that will like help shape the world.
Okay.
So when you invent the product, you're going to actually, you will see the product inside a vending machine, or you'll see it in places. So that's not just like, oh, I designed something, but you know, nobody ever sees it. So if you create an NPC, you know that you're going to see that NPC walking around. If you create an enemy, you're going to, you know, that's going to be someone you're going to fight. And then as you go down the list, you'll see that, you know, you're kind of going down the list anyway, but some of them are even, you know, like,
yeah,
the whole district, like, so you get to name like parts, like whole parts of town.
That's
where you
really
have
cool.
your own, or you have your own company where you have your own vending machines inside the environment, your own billboards up there. So there's a lot of different things that will kind of, you know, it's kind of just a way for the player to actually feel like they're, you know,
yeah,
they're actually a part of it. You know,
the founder's really cool, you know, start a company that, like, so what's like, is that just going to be a building, or is, you know, do they, yeah, well, what all goes into that?
Well, like I was just saying, so when you start a company, you will pretty much, you're going to have your product, you're going to have your vending machines, you're going to have your own logo for whatever it is.
That's
cool.
If you
want to name it after your dog, that's your
so
thing.
So do you get and to then, use that like in the game, or is it just going to kind of be like an aesthetic in the game?
I think it'll actually be more of an aesthetic in the game,
okay,
because, you know, it would be a little bit difficult. I mean, but if, you know, if only like, you know, 2 people get it, then maybe it might be something usable, because
the president tier looks the president tier looks awesome too. So designed quest NPC with a name and a portrait, you know, what goes into this tier?
Oh boy. So the, you know, the portrait, if you kind of scroll up a little bit, you can see like the character, is it up or down? I'm not sure, but it's the character portraits that are, that you could actually, oh, are you still there? I think it's chugging a little bit, but, the character portraits are, you know, the pixel art portraits that, Ed designs.
What, these ones?
What happened?
Can you hear these me? Ones? I can hear you.
Okay. For some reason, everything froze on my end. I'm not sure what's going on. But anyway, yeah. So if you're looking at it, then you see it. Yeah. So the really, you know, pixel art, you know, cool character close-ups that actually are shown when you're doing like a comic, the comic action, you know, the comic strip dialogue, which is something that, you know, that is pretty unique about our game. But, you know, you get to kind of have an NPC that's going to have your own portrait in the game. So you, you know, once again, it's something that you can kind of determine if you want to give that honor to someone else and say, I, you know, I want to dedicate, you know, my portrait to my wife or to, you know, my kids or whatever, then, you know, their portrait could be in there. So,
so they get an animated, one of these, you said, for the portraits.
So within the game, if you notice, like, we went rather than just your typical RPG dialogue system, we went with something that resembles the period 1920s. So we went with a comic strip. Mm-hmm. So there's a comic strip, like, as you're having the conversations, you'll see the comic strip pan out to different panels. We also included like dynamic word bubbles within there. So if you get this tier, you'll actually have an NPC that actually has not just a portrait, but you'll be in the comic strip as you're going back communicating with Price.
Yeah, if you scroll up, you could actually see what it looks like just a little bit. Right there. No,
yeah, there you go.
There you
go.
See?
Yeah, right no, that, that's, that, yeah, that's cool.
That's actually the what it would look like. So you could have your portrait, you know, actually be there and, you know, whatever, and be part of the game. So,
and then last but not least, we have the big cheese. So this is a heavy hitter. You get a special building dedicated to you, statue in the Hall of Innovators. That's cool. I always love that too. Like the little extra in there where you can just be like, this is me.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah. So you get a lot of the other perks with that one as well. Mm-hmm. So you'll have the ability to, you know, be a quest NPC. You could either own a district or you could have your own company. So there's a lot of different things that come with being the big cheese, because, you know, you are the big cheese. So
that's so cool. That is so awesome. And this Kickstarter just looks gorgeous. I love how animated it is. This is awesome. And yeah, when we originally, when it was just Edwin in here, I thought it was just going to be me and him. I copied these little chibis and I had them like on our little screen. But with everybody, I was like, I can't fit it on. But so after taking a look at that in its entirety, you know, what would you guys like to say to anyone who might be on the fence about backing if you just had a few moments to kind of address them?
You want to take this one?
Let's say, I mean, the only thing I can say is, I mean, We're essentially passionate about the project, and to be honest with you, the Kickstarter is not, like, the game and the project isn't dependent on the Kickstarter. The Kickstarter would basically allow us to expedite the release date, because with or without Kickstarter, the game is going to be completed. It's something where we put so much of our heart and soul into this project, mm-hmm. that quitting is never going to happen. So we're at that stage where we're so excited and we can't wait to simply have this game out there. I mean, because you think about it, we look at this game as something more or less comparable to like writing a novel, right? Mm-hmm. So you write a novel, like, sure, you're not going to get a lot of readers. You'll publish a novel, but you publish a novel. It's like, it's a feat in itself. It's an accomplishment. And for us, it's simply the accomplishment of having a game that's actually out there that's going to live on the internet, you know, for the rest, you know, long after we're gone. So our kids will be able to pull this up and say, our dads actually put this game together.
That's so cool.
So, yeah. So again, like, whether people decide, like, whether they decide they want to back or not, that's just simply up to them. But at the end of the day, it just is essentially just for us to be able to hire other designers to come in. So I'm not the only designer in this mm-hmm. project. Allow William to be able to expand his development, but again, it's not dependent on the Kickstarter. Let's just say that. So yeah,
I'll actually interject here. Well, even though it isn't dependent on it, I still think that it would be sad if we didn't, you know, hit at least that, you know, the minimum goal, only because. Mm-hmm. It just means that there's a lot of stuff, because there's only two of us. And if we still want to make this game and we want to make it, you know, while we're still young, you know, it just means that stuff will probably have to go, and things mm-hmm. that we originally had planned may get cut. So, you know, and that in itself would be kind of, you know, because there's so many cool ideas that we have that aren't even shown yet. There's so many things that we want to put in there that are going to be like, holy crap, that's freaking awesome. Because you can see how much it is just with two guys working on it. And we put a whole bunch of cool stuff in there. And there's just, and this is like literally what you're looking at is kind of the starting city. This is not even getting into like the big meat and potatoes of it. And it'll be a shame to have to cut any part of it. If we can't, you know, if we could. So I would say if you want to see this game in its entirety, then I would definitely, you know, donate, try, you know, yeah. I don't care. $25. Hey, enough people put $25. We could get there. But that's why, you know, it would just be sad to have to take away stuff that we think would really, really make the game, you know, even cooler than what it already is. And that's my take on it.
Will's like, we're going to make the game, but come on, Ed. Like, come on.
No, it's true because like we said, it's just if there's only two of us, we only have so much time in a day, you know? You know, we both have families, we both have jobs. So we both have things that, you know, we're juggling while we're making this. So even just putting this much together has been a feat within itself because it looks, you know, the way it looks, the way that it plays, everything is, you know, pretty damn good for, you know, two people that had to learn from like square one.
Yeah.
You know, but the ideas and the amount of stuff that we have from our script and the amount of things that we still haven't even been able to tackle yet. Like even that's why we didn't even put the demo out yet, because there's so much more stuff that's like we need this just that little bit of polish. We need these little pieces just to make it good from take it from good to make it great. And that's what, you know, that's what this would mean. That's the difference between saying we don't hit the Kickstarter mark. You're going to get the game, but it wouldn't be the great game that you could have gotten. So it's like, hey, you know, it's up to you to, you know, do what you can. But, you know, if you can't donate, we completely understand. But if you're on the fence, you know, I think you would be really surprised with what we come up with.
Yeah, absolutely. And guys, sharing is 100% free. So sharing this link, even if you can't back, might get a backing for them from a friend or family member who wants to check out this game. So share it as much as you can, as far as you can. Ed, Will, what are you guys up to for the rest of 2023? Is it just working on this game, or you guys have any other like projects or endeavors you want to take on?
I mean, it's just mainly working on the game, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's getting us to the finish line. I mean, there are ideas that me and William discuss, but we usually put the brakes on it and say, let's focus on one thing at a time, finishing Tales from Centropolis, and then we can consider our next project. You know, so, but yeah, I mean, just Tales from Centropolis so far.
No, I got you. So real quick, we come to one of my favorite parts of the show where I get to ask you for a little bit of advice for anyone who might be looking to getting into creating games. So with that being said, I mean, you can give advice from your respective roles too, you know, Ed as the designer and then Will as the developer. But for anyone looking to get just started, what would you, what advice would you offer them?
Want to go first, Will?
Yeah, I can. My advice is just do it. Just start. Because the problem is that a lot of people start getting bogged down by details. You start looking at what can I not do as opposed to how can I do it? You know, and that once you start having that mindset, you're going to kind of, you know, you kind of douse water on your own fire, as to say, you know, it's like you have the passion and all of a sudden you just like put that bucket of water over you. So just try to figure it out and then just do it. Even if it's a little bit a day, even if it's all you have is an hour to dedicate, then just, you know, make that little bit of effort because it's gonna make a difference. Even if the game that you create or even if you got started and you didn't quite make it, maybe that's the first attempt. The next one might be better. Maybe you're gonna learn some skills that could lead to something that you're not even aware of right now. So you don't even know what you're capable of until you try. And I always tell this to people. It's like, you know, you're going to be here for another 10 years, right?
Hopefully. Now,
in those 10 years, right? But you think about it, right? In those 10 years, do you want to be still where you are and just thinking about it and dreaming about it and saying, oh, if only I could do that and just regretting? Or do you want to say, you know what? I'm putting my foot forward and I took my shot. And if I didn't make it, I took my shot. I still tried, you know, and I still didn't give up. And, you know, you take a different shot, but you know, you're going to be there at some point, whether it's 5 years, whether it's 10 years, you're going to grow up into that person. So you could be the same you, or you could be someone else. So I say, just get started. Just do it.
Will, you should be like a motivational speaker. I'm like ready to end the podcast right now to get started.
Yeah, I'm also a personal trainer, so I can try to motivate people. Like, what are you doing? Get back to work. Pick up that weight.
I was gonna say that makes sense. I was like, I'm like, dude, I'm ready to go. Let's go. But Ed, what about you? For anyone looking to get into design, you know, if you could maybe go back to yourself and offer a little bit of advice, what would you say to yourself?
I would probably say, don't be afraid to make mistakes. I mean, if you have to do things over, I mean, that's the thing is when someone actually designs something and they're not feeling comfortable with it and they feel like they have to start from the ground up, there's a lot of things that you learn from that process and you take with you to the next step. And there's many a times, like when I started doing pixel art, I mean, there's so many times I had to like completely wipe out all the assets that I designed that I spent like months working on and just going from the ground up because I knew that I can make it better. So, I mean, just don't be afraid to simply make mistakes and have to start over. That's the only way that you're going to solidify anything that you learn is by just, you know, saying, all right, let me see what I can do if I do it this way and just start from the ground up. Don't get discouraged about making mistakes. It's a learning process, you know, and it takes time. Awesome. And it takes time. So don't give yourself a set schedule. I'm going to master pixel art at this time. Don't do that to yourself. You know, just take your time and you'll get there. You'll realize
awesome
it
advice.
Before you know it.
Yep. Awesome advice. So before we let you go, what are you guys consuming? What are you watching? What are you reading? What are you playing? You know, outside of creating, you know, let's hear what you guys are enjoying.
Let's see, for me, what I'm playing, what I did was sometimes an artist, you get subconsciously influenced by a lot of games. So I kind of shut out a lot of games, to be honest with you. William recommends these games to me all the time. Like, listen, I don't want to get influenced. But the only game that I do bond with my wife, we play constantly, is 7 Days to Die.
Okay.
So we're constantly playing that game, or Fallout 76. Yeah, and that's about it. Only because as it has nothing to do with my game. It's completely different, and we get to like shut out the outside world and just kill zombies. So.
You know, I was gonna say you probably would like Octopath Traveler, like with the pixel art in it and everything.
Okay. That's the thing. Yeah. Like, if I see something on there, I'm gonna be like, "Man, that's a great idea." And subconsciously, as I'm designing it, I'm like, I screwed myself. Now I can't stop thinking of the design. So yeah. So I there's so many games that I've actually bought, I've purchased, and I'm like, I can't wait for Tales to be over because I have so many games I gotta catch up on and play. it's nothing against them. I'm dying to play these games, but like, I know myself. Like, I'm gonna be somewhat influenced. So yeah. But
guys, back this campaign, make it happen so my man Ed over here can get to gaming already.
Yeah, exactly.
I still do it because I don't have to worry about the art part. I just have to, you know, if I, you know, sometimes since I do a lot of the lighting, well, I do all the lighting, I'll sometimes just look at the games and go, oh, that's pretty. How did they make that effect? And then I'll just start looking
so
at
it. So it's like the opposite effect.
Lighting.
You yeah, use it for like inspiration. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Me, I'm playing them or, you know, I'll play with, you know, my kids will play some games with me because they're old enough and they, you know, they know how to hold the controller and they know how to scream and get really mad.
What are you rocking with them? What games?
I play, I mean, my Steam library, because I have like Humble Bundle, I have so many games, it's like almost up to 800.
When you said Biomutant, it's Biomutant, right? That was from Humble Bundle, right?
Yep, because it came out, and I was like, I'm gonna play this, because I just got it from last month, so I was like, I'm gonna play
when
this
you
game.
Said that, like, I give out keys and stuff, like, I'll use that for, like, charity drives and stuff, and I remember that being, and I was, like, surprised, because that was, like, a pretty big game when it dropped.
Yeah, no, that game, yeah, I just played that one last month. I mean, with my kids, we've been playing Maneater, which isn't probably age appropriate for them, you know, a shark running around killing humans, but they're like, oh, I gotta kill him, I gotta, like, oh, man.
Hey, if they're having fun, that's all that matters, right?
Thank God your mom's not here, you know, she's sitting over there, she doesn't want to play it. So, but then I've also been playing Forspoken. I know that game gets a lot of flack, but just from the standpoint of a developer and seeing how like that the game got so much negative press, and I played demo and I was like, it's kind of fun. The you know, the combat is fun and all this stuff. And then, you know, just for their whole company just to get, you know, axed like that.
It's hilarious you said that.
Sucks, because I was like, you know what? I would support them because, like, you know, they're trying something different. They tried something, and I'm like, you know what? But now it's like, I'm still giving my money to Square Enix instead of those guys because they just got completely, you know, dumped on.
So,
and it, you know, but yeah, it's just weird because a lot of people didn't like the main character, and
dude,
like,
when
the
main
character, and you know, I'm like, you know what, if I was in this game and I was her, I was like, she sounds like a New Yorker, she sounds exactly how I would have sounded at her age when I was living in New York, so I can kind of relate. I was a complete jerk and I would have been an a-hole to everybody too. Oh, you want me to save you? Like, whatever.
So
like,
when I first played that demo, I put it on Twitter, and I remember being like, I don't know what the big deal is. I thought the combat was fine. I got roasted. Like, I had to mute the thread. There was literally like 500,000 views on it, like 500 likes. Then there was just like 1,000. It was like, I don't know, maybe a bot art. Yes! They were all like, you're an idiot. You're repeating the same attacks. Of course you would like the combat. I'm like, bro, like, screw you guys. Like, I'm going to mute this. I'm going to go off. But it's funny you said that because, like, I posted that tweet and just got so much hate. And yes. I'm like, dude, all I said was I liked it. You guys are just horrible people. Stop this.
Yeah. No, it gets a lot of bad, you know, people get really riled up about it. And I didn't really have, like, you know, it does get a little bit repetitive. And the story, all right, it's probably not the greatest story, but it's not the story that's the worst that I've ever played, to the point where I'm like, I hate this character. I hate it. And I'm like, I don't know. It's just, I don't see it. It's like, to me, it's just like, you know what? I know people probably gonna, now you're gonna get a lot of hate, cause, and I'm directing it towards you. But now, because I'm not even on social media, they won't find me. No, they probably will find me. But I'm just saying, it's just like, it just seems like I can't explain it. It's just, there's a lot of hate towards that main character, and I feel like, if I could relate to her, then, you know, people would probably hate me too. Would have hated me too. So I'm like, whatever. You know, I don't mind it to me. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you know what? You know, I think it was kind of cheesy and kind of stupid that she said that, but it was funny. I think I would have said that. So I just kind of,
I mean,
I'm willing to accept it. I'm willing to accept it for the little flaws that I see.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I think people are just going to, if they see a bandwagon, sometimes they're just going to join it, you know, just for the sake of just hating on something. And I just, it sucks, like you said, you know, they got axed and everything. It's a shame, but at the end of the day, people are going to be people. And if you are a person, you can make sure you're on the right path by backing this campaign. Right here is the link to make it happen, guys. And if you're unable to back, simply sharing it wherever you can helps just as much. Word of mouth is 100% free. It's time for us to wrap up. This has been one hell of a Sunday night. Ed, Will, thank you too for swinging by and hanging out with us. I hope everyone watching has an awesome night, but most importantly, guys, keep it geekly.